Today, look who's wealthy now. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. One of the factors I see in my household surveys is wealth transfer from one generation to another, stoked by the paper wealth created by the massive upswing in home prices. We see more first-time buyers being assisted by the bank of grandparents alongside the bank of mum and dad, as this chart shows. And this means there is a historic wealth transfer underway in Australia for those fortunate enough to have parents or grandparents with assets. But it's tough on those with none of those on-ramps to property or wealth. With a large chunk of that wealth stored in residential property assets, the shift is actually already reshaping the property markets, and it's going to intensify in the years to come. In my surveys, I encounter a theme quite often: households who cannot get into the property market while their friends and colleagues seem to be able to do. So how come some can and some can't? Well, it could be that others are simply just better at saving, hustling, investing, negotiating salary. Second, they've got money from the bank of mum and dad or from grandparents, either by way of a loan or maybe a cash injection. It's often not clear whether they're going to have to pay it back later or not. Or third, they are a beneficiary of the great intergenerational wealth transfer that's currently in train. Demographic research firm McCrindle just published a report, and they say baby boomers have passed on an estimated $6.2 trillion of capital to their children and grandchildren. Born between 1946 and 64, during the post-war economic boom, baby boomers make up just 21% of the population, but hold almost half of the country's private wealth. As the youngest boomers will be aged in their 80s by 2045, the transfer of their assets will accelerate. But it's important to recognise that this transition has already been underway for more than a decade. Baby boomers actually differ from their parents, the builders' generation, sometimes also referred to as the silent generation, who typically had a more conservative mindset. Staying in the family home until they passed away was the norm, meaning inheritance were typically delivered in one-time lump sums. But baby boomers are more agile. Many have now sold the family home and downsized, or more are trying to do that just now. And they've deployed sizable chunks of their capital already, either in the form of deposits or as a loan guarantor for not only the next in line, but also the following generation as well. McCrindle says, we're seeing, for instance, the rise of the bank of grandparents, with funds flowing directly to grandchildren. Their research shows that 12% of Gen Z have received financial support from their grandparents to buy a home. As such, we're increasingly seeing young first home buyers who lack the wages or savings purchasing homes for prices that were unimaginable to even second home buyers just 10 years ago. On the other hand, the rise of the bank of grandparents means families are purchasing homes at prices that were just unimaginable. Obviously, the value and nature of inheritance differ markedly, but as discussed in a recent AFR article, they identify three types of buyers. The first group includes those who use their inheritance to upgrade within their current suburb or move to a more desirable one. Then there will be those who are currently renting, with the inheritance finally allowing them enough for a deposit to buy. Others who are more independently wealthy will already be living in their home of choice, but may use the extra funds for an investment property or a lifestyle or a holiday home. Property competition, therefore, will intensify, especially in certain suburbs, perhaps in the inner and middle ring areas, where a significant proportion of this capital is already concentrated. This is one of the reasons why I think property investment activity is so strong at the moment. Children and grandchildren who grew up in these prime suburbs, therefore, are likely to remain there, directing split inheritance towards securing local properties, further driving demand and prices higher. In addition, for those who don't have access to large sums of inheritance in the present or potentially ever, property ownership in those desirable areas become even more difficult, which is why we are seeing more people purchasing out on the suburban ring, perhaps buying property lemons, and often isolated from normal society as a result. And that includes, by the way, some of those on high incomes. The reality is, in today's economy, building enough wealth for a decent deposit through wages is often a long and arduous process, a task made potentially more difficult by those able to leverage a large inheritance. And remember that incomes in real terms have gone backwards for a generation. For those expecting an inheritance, making the most of this capital is crucial. Large lump sum cash payments are typically a once or twice in the lifetime event, but do help to define the rest of your life and that of your children. According to analysis by Core Data, of the $4.9 trillion due to change hands in the next decade, 47% or $2.3 trillion will flow through to the children of those passing away, turning those privileged boomers into the world's most generous lenders, to a select few, of course. Another $1.7 trillion will flow to charities, and the final $932 billion will flow directly to the grandkids. So for decades, millennials have been talking about the privileged baby boomer generation, sitting apparently smug upon multi-million dollar investment property portfolios decades after graduating from Reagan University on zero student debt, ranting about avocado toast. They were an easy and often justified target for millennial rage. But economists and demographers say that's all changing. While intergenerational inequality has dominated discussion for the last few years, the reality is inequality within generations is also growing, and the mass transfer of wealth will only accelerate it. So the upshot, your next landlord might not be a boomer, they could be your best mate. According to the Inequality in Australia 2024 report from the Australian Council of Social Services in the University of New South Wales, while younger age groups have less wealth on average, it's more unequally divided than among other age groups. That is, the poorest 6% of those 35 and younger hold just 12% of all wealth, with an average net wealth of about $80,000. And meanwhile, the richest 10% of this age group hold 49% of total wealth and $2 million on average, or 25 times more. The report's authors suspect that most of this wealth is due to family transfers. That's because when measuring wealth split by income, the top 10% hold 24% of all wealth. When measured by total wealth, the top 10% hold 49%. This suggests the wealth of the highest 10% did not mainly come from savings out of their income, the report said. On the other hand, the 2021 Productivity Commission research into wealth transfers found that while inheritances increased absolute inequality, they also increased wealth for the whole population. That is, most people get a little bit richer, but the rich get much richer. The Productivity Commission put the intergenerational transfer at $3.5 trillion, by the way. That's smaller than Core Data's figures, which includes wealth in homes and businesses. Inherited wealth is only a modest contributor to intergenerational wealth persistence, Productivity Commissioner Catherine DeFonte said at the time. About one third of this observed persistence is due to inherited wealth. The rest comes from all of the other things that parents give to their children: education, networks, values, and other opportunities. More recently, Roger Wilkins, one of the lead researchers behind the annual HILDA survey, looked at the average wealth of Australians whose youngest children are millennials. Those in the wealthiest 25% have an average wealth of $4.59 million, while those in the bottom 25% have just $200,000. It means that the wealthiest parents of millennials already have wealth 23 times greater than the poorest parents. Naturally, a fair bit of that will be eaten up by aged care, and any inheritance handed down will also be a factor of how many siblings the inheritor has. If you have higher income parents, you stand to inherit more, and you also stand to earn more yourself. So it's adding fuel to existing intergenerational inequality, Wilkins said. According to that 2021 report by the Productivity Commission, 10% of all inheritances will account for about half the value of bequests from today's retirees. And it's the same story around the world. Globally, about $100 trillion is shifting between generations. Internationally, of the 15 billionaires younger than 30, none have created their own wealth, buoyed instead by inheritances. That's according to Forbes. And according to UBS, more billionaires in 2023 were minted by inheritances than through work. That's the first time UBS has seen this trend in the 9 years it's been doing the report. In the Asia Pacific, inheritor billionaires received $2 billion in 2023, while entrepreneurs made $1.6 billion. It's what prominent banker Ken Koster has termed an inheritocracy. In Australia, one of the immediate effects of the wealth transfer is changes to people's relative abilities to access the housing market. Across Australia, 40% of those aged 25 to 34 who want to buy a place to live expect to ask the bank of mum and dad for help to achieve their dreams. That's according to research by the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Of those surveyed in Australia's hottest market, Sydney, 66% expect that they'll not be receiving anything, but 9% expect they'll get $20,000 or more. According to Uhuru, a transfer of $10,000 is associated with about a 90% increase in the likelihood of transitioning to first home ownership. And once buyers are in the market, their wealth trajectory shifts dramatically. Over the last 20 years or so, the dollar gap between renters and owners' wealth has nearly doubled. The average owner-occupier who paid off their mortgage saw wealth jump from about $500,000 in 2003 to 4 financial year to more than $1 million in 2019-20. At the same time, as renters' wealth hovered around the same level. Put it another way, in more than half of the 30 quarters to June 2019, the median Sydney home earned more than the median full-time worker. Now, of course, there's a political dimension to wealth transfer as well. As people receive inheritances and grow wealth, they shift to the right, says election analyst John Black. While millennials and Gen Z Australians are more left-leaning than their parents and grandparents were at their ages, that's just a factor of them having less wealth to conserve, he adds. He's not convinced that this socially progressive slant will persist once mum, dad, and grandparents' money is handed over and homes are bought. They will become more conservative. And because there is such a large cohort of boomers, when they all collectively cark it over the next 20 years, there will be a massive transfer of wealth, he says. There will be an increase in the Liberal vote, and it will be proportional to the deaths that take place. These kids won't be worried about finding a house because they inherited it. All of this means that while arguably the easiest way to make money in Australia is to buy property, it's increasingly hard for those without family money to get a look in. Last year, researchers from the University of Sydney and Curtin University gave 20 households aged 25 to 34 years money diaries and found that even though young people were actively cutting back, some relying on two-minute noodles, their savings kept being eroded by rent and large expenditures like car repairs and insurance. One of the most important saving strategies to emerge was living with parents or in properties owned by parents, said the report author, Dr. Lawrence Troy. However, if only those with families who are able to provide support can do that, then those who don't have supportive families are potentially locked out of home ownership altogether, and by extension, locked out of the important wealth-building dimension that property provides, particularly into retirement. Brendan Coates at the Grattan Institute said that Australia is heading towards a Jane Austen-like future, where one's lot in the world is tied directly to their family wealth. It isn't new, of course, for one's wealth to be, to some extent, determined by their parents, said Coates, but the stakes are getting higher. And leading actuary Michael Rice agrees there's a real problem now with young people whose parents rent because you're going to get intergenerational renters, he said. There's now a cohort of people who are trapped into high rent and those have low disposable incomes and who can never pay a deposit. This may not be the end of the world in your 20s and 30s, but the rubber hits the road in retirement. The entire retirement system is predicated on the idea that Australians are retiring into a paid-off home. According to the University of New South Wales Centre of Excellence in Population Ageing Research, as at 2019, fewer retirees lived in poverty, but if they were renting, that climbed to nearly half. And in the meantime, a recent study by the Australian National University found social cohesion was at a record low, with economic issues and housing affordability key drivers. Since 2013, the percentage of 25 to 34-year-olds who think that Australia is a land of economic opportunity, where hard work brings a better life, has fallen from 80% to 51%, and the same trend was observed across all age groups. Belief in the fair go appears to be declining. We estimate that overall agreement that Australia is a land of economic opportunity has declined by 16 percentage points since 2013, the research has found. Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg says part of the solution is to allow first home buyers to be able to parlay their super balance into a deposit. That idea is strongly opposed by super funds and Labour, who argue that all this will do is further pump up property prices and drain super balances. There are perhaps other solutions too. More houses is an obvious place to start, but attempts so far have been stymied by expensive costs, entrenched resistance by councils, and slow development approvals. Inheritance taxes are a dirty word in Australia, says Grattan's Brendan Coates, which means that the best way of reducing inequality is by taxing assets like housing and super more while people are alive. Shifting taxation away from workers and scaling back some of the very generous tax concessions on assets is a key priority for tax reform in Australia, he argues. And Dr. Lawrence Troy of the University of Sydney agreed that the way asset accumulation is privileged in Australia needs to be rethought, as is the dysfunctional way housing is delivered. We need to think about the role of, for example, not-for-profit actors in the space. You can look at cities like Paris, where there's been a bipartisan commitment to 30% public or public-supported housing by 2035. This is a very expensive global city, so there's no reason why Sydney or Melbourne couldn't aspire to the same kind of thing. But standing back, the point I want to highlight is the inequality that is being created by a bad policy that has been rolled out over the last generation or two. And yet, of course, I don't see any interest from politicians to tackle these big picture issues. No, they're going to actually try and build more properties, although, as we've discussed, that's unlikely to be successful, or raid superannuation. At the moment, there's a massive gap between political aspiration and reality. And that is one of the reasons why I think those with wealth will get wealthier, while those without the step up from family wealth will get poorer. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.